Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Kama Daf Tes. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formative introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 12 lines from the top of Daf Tes. Before we begin the shiur, we glance at the side where we have a Nosei Mivneh heading, which features the triangle, and it notes Nisyonos Lahasbir Divrei Rav Asi. We have attempts to explain Rav Asi, who says, Ksofim Harei Hein Kekarka. So the triangles, as you can see, if you skim down the page, you'll notice we've numbered them 1 through 4. When an inverted triangle appears, recognize that that is a dechios. We call that dechios, rejections of what was being suggested. Now the Gemara. Omar Avasi, Ksofim Hare Hein Kekarka. Cash is like land. Lamai Hilchasa. Regarding what did Rav Asi say that? If it said with regard to metav, meaning that even if someone has top quality property, metav, we've referred to extensively in our previous shurim, a reference to idis, top quality land, you can pay off the debt. In the case of a damage, the victim can demand payment from top quality land. You, the offender, can pay with cash. Is that the point? Is that what Rav Asi is trying to say? That cash is like land? That instead of paying with land, you could pay with cash? If that's the case, Hainu de Rav Huna. That would be the same as Rav Huna. Now, you see arrows to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. You can see above, from the end of our previous shiur, Rav Huna made that point. And therefore, the objection here is, if that is Rav Asi's intent, so above it should have said, V'chein Omar Rav Asi. In other words, Rav Huna presents the halacha, where he said, Oh, yikesef o meitav, and V'chein Omar Rav Asi. This is Gemara learning and not a novel, so I don't mind, we'll say, spoiling the end of the story here. Therefore, if you skip to number 4, you skip to the 4 lines from the bottom, the final triangle in this series, the Gemara there will be saying, Ela mai harein kakaka, linyan meitav. Just like you see here in number 1. And then the Gemara says the same objection. Ihochi hainu de Rav Asi, the hainu de Rav Huna. Is this then not the same as Rav Huna from before? And should it not have said in the Gemara, v'chein omer Rav Asi? So the Gemara says, that's right, eimo v'chein omer Rav Asi. In fact, we accept that. And we add that the Gemara could very well have taught, and thusly Rav Asi teaches, just like Rav Huna. So we're going to go through a number of stages of analysis, but at the end of the day, we're going to be coming back to number 1. In the meantime, though, as we read number 1, we also saw the inverted triangle. That was our objection. That leads us to number 2. What does Rav Asi mean when he says Ksofim Arayim Kekarka? Ela Lishnei Achin Shecholku. Two brothers divided their father's estate. V'notal echad karka v'echad ksofim. One brother took the land. The other took the cash. Let's assume everything is the same value. One just took land and the other took cash in dividing their father's estate. V'bo bal choyv v'notal karka. And their father's creditor came and collected the land. The Ozil Hai Veshokil Palgo Biksofim Bahade. The brother that lost the land to the creditor, he in turn goes to the brother that took the cash and takes half of the cash. The Gemara says, well, if that ruling is very obvious, pshita, high bra, high lav bra. This we indicate is dechio aleph. We're going to see there are two inverted triangles, one after the other. The second one is an ikah diamri. It's introduced ikah diamri, the squiggle underline expression that you see on the next line. There's a second version of how to deflect answer number two, triangle number two. The first deflection is, well, that this explanation, in other words, if this is Rav Asi's intent, Ksofim Arein Kekarka, is coming to tell me that a brother who lost the land in favor of a preceding creditor of their father, of course he has recourse to collect his share in the inheritance in terms of cash that the other brother had taken. And the Gemara's point here is one is only one a son and the other is not a son. What we mean by that is the son that took the cash as his inheritance, he also had a responsibility to pay off his father's debts. If the land happened to be collected, and in fact only land can be collected, but does that relieve the brother who took the cash from his responsibilities? No, says the Gemara. Therefore, he, the one who lost the land, will seek compensation from the brother that took the cash and take half the cash as his share in the inheritance. Iko diamri, another approach, an alternative approach, adarabba, to the contrary, le'idoch gisa, to the other side, the other extreme, the omale, the brother that took the cash, I should say, the brother that took the land says to the one that took the cash, the omale, lahochi shakli ksofim, the brother that took the cash can say, I took the cash, di mignavi lo mishtamlo minoch. If the cash would be stolen, so I wouldn't seek any compensation from you, you who took the land. Ulach ishak lisaro, and you took the land, di mitrifa, that if it would be collected from you, lo mishtamlo loch midi minoi, you would not come to collect anything from me. So that you can't explain Rav Asi saying Ksofim Hare Hein Kekarka, that they are one in the same, that they are like one another, because of these respective stark differences. The one who took the cash in this particular case where the land was seized is going to maintain all of the cash with the claim that I took the cash and I took a risk in taking the cash, understanding that if it would be stolen from me, I wouldn't come to seek compensation from you who took the land. But at the same time, you took the land with a risk, knowing that if the land would be collected from you, you wouldn't seek compensation from me. So, at this point then, the statement of Rav Asi would not have relevance to the case of the Shnei Achim Shecholku with the case of the creditor seizing the land. Elo, l'shnei achim shecholku, the Rav Asi teaching will have relevance to the following two brothers that divided. Ubo balcho v'notal chelkoi shel echod mehem. They divided everything equally. The balcho, the creditor, came and took he collected his debt from one of the two brothers. The second brother comes, that is the brother who lost, will come to the second brother and get compensation for the share that he lost in paying their father's creditor. get compensation from the brother upon whom the creditor did not seize any property. So now when the second, when the brother who's going to compensate, who's going to offer compensation to the brother that lost, he pays either in land or in cash. That's what Rav Asi meant when he said, Ksofim hare hein kekarka. The Rashi across from here, L'shnei achim shechoku karka. Rashi continues, Ubo balchov v'notal chelek ho'echod. The father's creditor came and took the portion of one. The meshalim lo ho'acher, the second brother, the brother from whom nothing was collected, pays chatzi chelko, half of what he received, oi kaka, either land, oi mesalik lebezuzi, or pays him off with cash. V'hainu hare hein kekarka. And this is what was meant by Rav Asi's statement, hare hein, naming cash is like karka. The motzi mesalik lebezuzi kibakarka. He can pay off his brother with cash, just like he could pay him by giving half of his land, the land that he inherited. The Gemara asks, however, V'ho omro Rav Asi chado zimno. If this would be the explanation, Rav Asi already said that on another occasion. Notice we have a bracketed section, and the note on the side says, Hasograyim einom l'shem diluk. These brackets are not for skip purposes. Elu laharos she'ikra she'lo hi, Rav Asi omro chado zimno. We're trying to show that the main question is what appears just before the brackets. Rav Asi already said this once. Within the brackets, we're then shown what that other occasion was. Being that Rav Asi would not need to repeat himself, what then does Rav Asi mean above when he says Ksofim Arein Kekarka? And we saw before what we feature with our triangle number 4 regarding Meitav, that a damager can pay off his debt to the victim with land or cash. Now, within the brackets, we focus on a case, and we're going to see names, Rav, Shmuel, and then Rav Asi. What we'll be most interested in is, of course, what Rav Asi says. The Gemara, Di'itmar, Achim Shechoku, Ubo Balchov, Anotal Chelko Shelechod Mehem. The very same situation as we featured in triangle number 3. Brothers divided land they inherited from their father, and the father's creditor came to collect from only one of the brothers. Rav Omar Botla Machloikis. Rav says that in a case like that, their original division of the estate is void, and they re-divide again, an equal division. Ushmuel Omar Viter. Shmuel says he foregoes. And Rav Asi Omar Noitel Ravia Bekarka Uravia Bemois. As far as Rav Asi is concerned, there are actually two Lishonos in Rashi. He prefers the first version of Rashi. In other words, the first version that he presents, he actually prefers that one. The Gemara continues. We'll come back to Rav Asi later. But in the meantime, we go over the shitas we saw here. Rav and Shmuel. So Rav Omar Botlo Machlikis. Why does he say that? That once one of the brothers are seized upon for payment, they have to go back to the beginning and redivide. Kosovar ho'achem shecholku kiyorshim havu. The approach that Rav takes is that brothers, once they divide their estate, they nevertheless, even though they've divided their estate, they nevertheless have the label of heirs. And by labeling both of them as heirs, we're saying both had the obligation, both had an equal obligation to pay off their father's debt. So that if the debt was paid off by one of them, that doesn't free the other one from such an obligation. Therefore, when the land was collected from one of them, the other brother has to compensate, has to share in what he inherited with the brother that paid off the debt. And that leads to their redividing the estate from the beginning. Shmuel, we continue in the Gemara Shmuel Merviter, Kosov Arachem Shecholku Lekuchos. He views brothers, once they divide the estate, they're viewed like purchasers. And not only that, but they're like purchasers who bought without a guarantee. So that if the brothers divided the estate and the creditor collected from one, he is like someone who purchased without any guarantee. He lost his land and that's it. He doesn't have any recourse. Ravasi said, Noitel Raviya Bakaka U Raviya Bamois. Now the two Lashonos in the Rashi involve how do you read the word U Raviya Bamois? The Vav U Raviya, is it O Raviya? Or is it U Raviya, meaning in addition to the half, the quarter in Karka, also a quarter in Mois? Rashi, let us look at it together. Rashi, right across from here, Raviya Bakaka, Yachsu Loi, Raviya Chelko, Oi, Karka oi mois. The brother that was not seized upon, he compensates the brother that did pay off the debt by giving him not half of the land, not half of what he inherited, but rather a quarter of what he inherited. The quarter is either in land or in cash, cash value. Why is it, why doesn't he pay, we'll say, a full half of what he inherited? After all, is it not reasonable to say that the brother who paid off the debt was simply sharing the burden with the brother who was not seized upon and both have an obligation? Well, as far as Ravasi is concerned, that point is not so clear. And we go on in the Gemara. Misafka lei, Ravasi has a doubt. E kiyorshin domu, e kilukuchos domu. Are brothers viewed as heirs? And if they were, so then the brother who was not seized upon for collection has an obligation to share equally his portion of inheritance with the brother that did pay off the debt. That would mean 50% of what he inherited he would have to part with. However, ikuluchulos domo. On the other hand, Ravasi says maybe brothers that divided the estate are viewed like purchasers. And as we said before in Shmuel, one who purchased something without a guarantee, that's it. He ended up losing to the creditor who had an earlier claim on the land, and too bad. You got what you did without any guarantee, so you have no compensation. So it's either, since Ravasi has a doubt, what is the brother that lost entitled to? Is he a Yoresh, which means he's entitled to a full 50% of his full share, a complete 50%? Of the inheritance that the other brother received? Is he entitled to a complete half of what the other brother received? Or maybe nothing? What's the midway point between 50% and zero? 25%, which is a quarter. And hence, the Gemara says, Hilkoch, Neitel Raviya Bakarka, Raviya Bamois. Therefore, the brother that experienced the loss will get a quarter of the land that the other brother inherited, and that will be either in terms of land, or if the brother that didn't lose chooses to pay off the brother that did lose in terms of cash, he can do so. So here you see the statement of Ravasi of Ksofim Harein Kakarka, that you have the choice of paying off, of compensating the brother that lost in terms of land or in terms of cash, Ravasi already said that. So that in triangle number 3, there's no need for Ravasi's comment over here to reflect that very same idea. Ravasi said this point already in this discussion with Rav Shmuel and Ravasi, having made the point already. So what does Ravasi mean at the opening of today's shir, Kesofa Mareim Kakarka? Elo, we continue in the Gemara, Mai Harehen Kakarka, Linyan Meitav, that when a damage victim is being paid, he's paid with either land, Meitav, top quality land, called Idis, or if the offender wants to pay with cash, he can pay the victim with cash. This has nothing to do with brothers that divided an estate. I hope that's clear. That's why this is a new approach as opposed to what we saw in number 3. Well, if this is the approach to accept for explaining Ravasi, that it has to do with Meitav, how a Mazik pays off the Nizak, well, Ihochi Hainu Rav Huna, this is what Rav Huna said earlier. And if that's the case, so should it not have said above, when Rav Huna said what he did, he said, oh, Kesef O Meitav, he should have said, V'chein Om Ravasi. The Gemara says, okay, Eima, V'chein Om Ravasi. So say that. Add that to the understanding of Rav Huna above, that Ravasi says the same thing. Therefore, when our Gemara opened today with Amar Ravasi Ksofim Harein Kakarka, he was reflecting that which Rav Huna had said above. Amar Bizera, Amar Rav Huna, B'mitzvah Ad Shlish. My Shlish. Rav Huna says that when it comes to mitzvahs, up to a third. Well, what are you referring to? My shlish. What third are you referring to? The Gemara continues at the top of Amud Beis. E lema shlish beso, a third of your holdings, literally a third of your house. It means a third of your worth. Elo mehata. If that be the case, that when it comes to mitzvahs, you have to pay a third of your value, your third of your assets. If a person has 3 mitzvahs to perform, does that mean then that he has to pay out all of his assets? That's highly unreasonable. Elo Amar Rabbi Zera, and we have a diamond highlighting what we see on the side under the Mivnesh Shtei, Shnei Lishonos B'Divrei Rabbi Zera, 2 versions of Rabbi Zera. So Elam Rabbi Zera, Behidur Mitzvah Ad Shlish B'Mitzvah. We look at Rashi on the second line from the top. Behidur Mitzvah Ad Shlish B'Mitzvah She'im Moitzei Shnei Sifrei Torah Liknois. A person, let's say, chanced upon 2 Torah scrolls available for purchase. V'Echod Hadur Mechavero. And one is more beautiful than the other. More beautiful in terms of the different aspects, the quality of the parchment, the quality of the writing. Yosef Shlish Hadomim V'Yikach Esahodr. You're expected to add a third of the value in order to buy the more beautiful Sefer Torah. Desanya Zekeli V'Yanveu, a quote from the Posuk in the Torah by, you find in the case of the Oz Yosher, the Shiras Hayam, and we learn from that, Hisnoi Lefonov B'Mitzvahs, one should beautify oneself in terms of the mitzvahs that he does. That's beautifying the mitzvahs is a fulfillment of Hisnoi Lefonov B'Mitzvahs. Be beautiful in your mitzvahs to the Almighty. Asei Lecha, Sefer Torah Noah, Lulav Noah, Talis Noah, Tzitzis Noah. Examples of different mitzvahs, a Sefer Torah, a lulav, talis, or tzitzis, they should be beautiful. So Reb Zera explains that in order to accomplish or achieve Hidur mitzvah, pay a third more. Up to a third more. Boy, Ravashi. Ravashi asks, Shlish milagav oy shlish milabar. Literally, is the third from within or a third from without? In order to appreciate this, Rashi explains, Shlish milagav, ukagon imakota nimkar bashisha. The lesser one, kot means the smaller one, the lesser one is sold for six. Yosef shnei dinri, dahainu shlish milagav, add two more dinarim. Dinar is a denomination of currency. You add two more dinar for hidur. Now, two relative to the original price of six for the lesser quality one, two represents a third of the original number. That's shlish shebesoy chadomim. Two dinar, when the original price is six, the two is one third of the within the asking price of the regular quality item. Oshlish milabar. Hadomim, the amount, when you calculate milabar, yachloik, lishnayim, the original price you divide into two, for Yosef Chelik Shlishi Mishalo, and add a third unit equal to one of the two in dividing. The Hainu Im Kot Nimkar Bashisha, if the lesser quality one is sold for six, you take the number six, divide it into two parts, three and three. And then take three, Yosef Shloisha Dinarim, and add that, V'yikach es ha-godol b'tisha. And then buy the more expensive one for nine. And the three that we made reference to here is a third of the new number that you got. The Gemara. As far as Ravasi's question is concerned, is the additional amount that you would be expected to pay for Hidur Mitzvah Shlish Milagav or Shlish Mabar, that ends off with take. That is left unresolved. B'marovo Amri Mishmei de Rabbi Zera. In Eretz Yisrael, they say in the name of Rabbi Zera, regarding Shlish B'mitzvah, Ad Shlish Mishalo, Mikan V'elech Mishel HaKodesh Boruch Hu. We look at Rashi. Ad Shlish Mishalo Dahainu, Oysa Shlish Yosef Hidur Mitzvah Mishalo Hu. Sheino nifra lo b'chayav. When a person adds a third to fulfill hidur mitzvah, that is what you are expected to pay, and don't expect to be compensated for that in your lifetime. You'll get reward in the world to come for having been diligent in fulfilling hidur mitzvah. Kidamrinon, as the Gemara says elsewhere in Masachas Avodah Zarah, Hayoim lasoisam. That's of course taken from the Torah, and we infer that from the words Hayom lasoisam means today, in this life is for fulfilling mitzvahs. Velo hayom litol schoram. But this world, today, nowadays, this world is not the time for getting reward. So this idea of not expecting compensation for my expenditure for hidur mitzvah, that is true if you're paying up till a third more. Mikan ve'elech, Rashi goes on, Mashi Yosef behidur Yosef al-shlish. If you're willing to pay more than a third more for the more beautiful item, Yifra lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chayav. That difference from a third and up, whatever the difference is, that the Kodesh Baruch Hu will compensate for you even in this lifetime, for having gone out of your way, gone out on a limb to spend so much more for the hidur mitzvah. Let us continue now with the Mishnah. I want to point out before we read the Mishnah that it's a Mishnah that, in simple translation terms, is rather difficult to translate. Therefore, in appreciating the Mishnah will be totally reliant upon the Gemara and Rashi as well, in order to, let's say, make some sense of what it's trying to teach us. The Mishnah. Kol shechavti b'shmirosoi, hichsharti es nizkoi. Hichsharti b'miktsas nizkoi, chavti b'tashlumei nizko, kehechshir kol nizko. We can take a look at Rashi, but let's appreciate the fact that the Gemara is necessary in order to reveal, to thrash out the meaning of things. But in the meantime, Rashi says, "Shechafti b'shmiroso, shenischayafti l'shomro." The Mishnah opened up by saying, "Kol shechafti b'shmiroso." Anything that I obligated myself, to watch, to care for, to supervise. Hichsharti, Rashi continues, hichsharti es nisko, klomar. When you see klomar, you know or automatically that you're dealing with an explanation that's beyond the mere translation. Klomar. Im hizik, if damage ensued. Hichsharti vizimanti oise hezek, shelo shamarti v'yofe. Kach motzasi. By the fact that damage took place under my watch, it shows that I did not watch it carefully. Lishnach Rina, Rashi has another explanation. Hichsharti es nizko, olai lahachshu l'sakin es nizko, klomar ni chayev l'shalem. Hichsharti es nizko means I am obligated to make good. In other words, if I obligated myself to watch something and damage took place, so I have to make good. I have to compensate. Rashi continues. Hichsharti b'miktsas nizkoi, chavti b'tashlumei v'chulei, hayichsharti lodam hichsharti kama. And here's where you see the real difficulty in translation. We saw the word hichsharti on the second line of the Mishnah, at the beginning of the line. In the middle of the line, the same word appears with a totally different meaning. Rashi's telling us that hichsharti here is not the same as hichsharti at the beginning of the line. Deha vadai zimanti hu, klomar, im zimanti es miksas nizkoi. Here, hichsharti means I made the damage possible. I made the loss possible, but partially. Afopi shelo zimantiv kulo, even though I wasn't responsible for the full damage, I was responsible only for part. Chafti lishalim es nizko, I am obligated to compensate the damage for the damage. Kech shekol nizko kilu zimantiv kulo, as if I was responsible for it entirely. So the Gemara mefarash echidomi. The Gemara will have to explain what are you talking about? What is it? What's the explanation behind someone that is guilty in part, and the result is he has to pay full? We turn back to the Mishnah. Nechosim she'ein bohen mi'ila. Articles, property, that there is no mi'ila violation in benefiting from them. Mi'ila is the name of the sin for someone who derives benefit from sanctified items, derives personal benefit from sanctified items. Nechosim she'ein bohen mi'ila would be a reference to general property, general items. So nechosim she'ein bohen mi'ila, we will see, if I damage them, so I'll be obligated to compensate. This will be presented to us in contrast to nechasim that carry with them a me'ila punishment. If I damage them, so I won't be obligated to compensate. Based on a gzeiras hakosuv, where the pasuk speaks about shor re'ehu, if I damage the shor of my friend, I have to pay. If I damage the shor of the Beis Hamikdash, something sanctified, that's already not my equal, that's not my friend. So then there's no obligation to pay. So let's continue in the Mishnah. Nechosim, we read already that don't carry with them any Mi'ilah violation. We'll call it common property. Nechosim Shehein Shel B'nei Bris. Property, items owned by fellow members of the covenant, to the exclusion of idol worshippers. Nechosim Hamiyuchodim. Properties that have ownership, that have owners, as opposed to hefker, something unowned. Ubechol Mokaim. Chutz Mirushus Hamiyuchedes Lamazik. Wherever damage takes place, except if the damage took place in the domain of the damager. Imagine someone took his animal, walked into, we'll say Mr. A walked into Mr. B's property. And while in Mr. B's property, the ox, the animal of Mr. B, damaged Mr. A's ox. Who in a case like that, we're not going to hold Mr. B culpable for the damage that his animal wrought within his own property. What else? So we say that one is responsible to compensate for damages, b'chol mokom, wherever they take place, except for the reshus hamiyuchedes lamazik, or reshus hanizik v'hamazik. At this point, we'll just have to wait for the Gemara to explain that. Chav hamazik lishalim teshlumi nezik b'meitav aretz. In all the above cases, whether it be common property that's damaged, property owned by fellow Jews, property that's owned as opposed to unowned, when damage happens, the offender must compensate. Now this expression, kishihizik chav hamazik, Rashi reminds us, ha darshino le beresh pirkin lasuye keren. This is an extra expression to include the obligation of paying for damage caused by one's animal through keren, through horns, through goring. Now the Gemara. You notice we open up with a bow tie shape on the side of the Gemara. Under our Mivner structural note, Brisos Hamasbiros HaMishnah. We'll see Brisa Tanaic literature that deals with the Mishnah, that explains the phrases of the Mishnah. So you see number one over here, and a second Brisa that explains phrases of the Mishnah will appear on the lower part, the last third of Daf Yud Amud Aleph. As things appear, we'll not include that in today's shiur. At that point, we will have spilled over a significant amount of Gemara beyond the Daf Yomi structure. But nevertheless, it's beneficial to be aware ahead of time that Braisa number one opens with the expression Kol Shechavti B'Shemiros Yechsharti as Nizkoi. What does that mean? What does that refer to? And when we get to Yud Amud Aleph, and you see the next bow tie, the Braisa deals with the phrase Yechsharti Miksas Nizkoi Chavti B'Tashlumei Nizko Kech Shekol Nizko. That second, we'll say, vague expression, unusual expression, will then be dealt with there. So now, the Gemara. Tana Rabbanan, Kol Shechavti B'Shmiros, so Yechsharti Es Nizkoi. That was in our Mishnah. That was the beginning of the Mishnah. Ketzad, what does that refer to? How do we understand that? Shor Ubar Shemosran L'Chiri Sheit V'Kotan. An ox or a pit. They're my obligation. And what did I do? I gave them over to a chirish, a deaf mute, a shoita, an imbecile, a cotton, a minor. These are people that we consider inept, incapable, and vehiziku, and damage resulted. Chayov l'shalem, you are obligated, the original party, are obligated to compensate for damage that resulted. Masha'ein came be'esh. Not so in the case of fire. Rashi immediately tells you that will be explained later. B'mai askinan, what are we dealing with here? What are the circumstances? What are the details? Triangles appear, and they're explained on the side under the Nosei / Mivneh heading. The triangle represents shlavim, stages. Lasbir, hevdel, bedin, bein shor, bor, shemosa, lecheri, shayte, vekotin, vezikul, shechayev, zeh shemosa, mashen, kein, be'esh. We have to explain this distinction between giving over a shor or bor to be supervised by these inepts, where the original party is held responsible, the one who gave it to them to supervise, as opposed to fire. So what is this? Notice, again, we mentioned there are triangles. We've numbered them four. We'll call it four stages. In Lema, number one, Bishor, Koshur, Ubor, Mechusa. We're dealing with an ox that was tied up. A bor, a pit that was covered. The parallel then, the kavasa, we use a dashed underline to highlight this, we'll say the kavasa, the contrast. I should say it's parallel and contrast at the same time. The parallel circumstances that will result in our contrasting Eish with Bor and Shor. What's the parallel case then by Eish? If the Bor and Shor were in a secure state, then the Kavosog Abiyesh, the equivalent of the fire, would be Gachelis, a coal. A coal is not flaming. It will pose damage or pose danger only if it's blown upon. Well, my shno hocho. If that was the explanation, why would you make any distinction between the case of shorbor? I gave over a shor, an ox, or a pit in a secure state to one of these inepts. And you're saying that if some damage results, I'm held responsible for giving it to them. And by a fire, if I gave a coal to them and damage results, I would be exempt. There's no, at this point, we'll simply say there's no basis for making a distinction. If that's the case, so we've got to go back to explain what are the circumstances. Must be different circumstances. Ella? Bishor mutar. Mutar means untied. Ubor magula, an exposed pit. The kavasog abiyesh, the equivalent by fire, would then be, just like in the case of the shor mutar bor megula, they're not secured, they're posing danger elements, then the parallel by fire, shall have us, I gave a flaming torch, a flame, to one of these inepts. Well, Masha Enki Be'esh the Potter, are you telling me then, in the source above we said, as opposed to fire what? That you'd be exempt? We're using a double underline to highlight the names Reish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan, will appear later. Reish Lakish has said, Mishmei de Chizkiah, in the name of Chizkiah, Lo Shanu, the exemption for fire and giving over to these inepts is true only if I gave the inept a coal and the inept blew on it. The original party isn't expected to take that into consideration, to worry that might happen. If it happens, it's extenuating, it's far-fetched, and therefore we will not hold the original party responsible for giving a coal to an inept. Aval shal heves chayev. If I gave a torch or a flame to one of these inepts and damage resulted, then the original party is guilty. My time of the bori hazeka, because the damage that can result from a flaming flame is bori, is clear, is imminent. So I don't see, according to approach number two, I don't see the basis for contrasting shorabar that are in a, we'll say, in a danger-posing state with fire in a danger-posing state. Lioilom, this throws us back to approach number one. B'shor koshur bar mechusa. U'dekavoso gabi esh gacheles. The shore is tied up, the pit is covered, the parallel by the fire, which we say you are exempt for, is a mere coal. U'dekoamris maishna hocho maishna hocho. And we objected to this before by saying, well, why is there any grounds for any distinction to be made? The answer to it is as follows. Shore, true, the shore is tied up, but darke lintuki, its normal way is to try to become detached from the rope, from its being tied up. Bor, darke linsuri, the cover on a pit is normal, its derech, its way, its normal fashion is to fall in. Linsuri, Rashi says in the lower part of the page, Linsuri linpoil, to fall. Rashi continues at that point, says, Hilkach shmirahi, it's poor quality guarding on my part to entrust a tied ox or a covered pit to one of these inepts. Afilu gileo cheresh, even if the deaf mute exposed the pit, Baal habor chayev l'shalem shelo shomro karoy, the original owner of the pit, is obligated to compensate because he did not watch it sufficiently by his giving it to a cheresh or one of these other inepts. So I understand that the boar and the shor, even though given over to the inepts in a secure state, one is nevertheless obligated to compensate any resulting damage because of the derech of each one to become, well, dangerous. Gacheles, now as opposed to gacheles, kama deshovik lo ma'am yami of Oslo, as long as it remains without any involvement, it dies down, getting less and less powerful. Therefore, in the case of the shor and the boar, even though you gave it to them in a secure state, in the course of time, even without the involvement of the cheresh shoyte v'katan, they will become dangerous. In the case of the gacheles, without any involvement, it becomes less and less dangerous, and hence the exemption. We continue in the Gemara. Ule Rabbi Yochanan di Omar afilu moser lo shel heves nami poter. Now turning to Rabbi Yochanan, who disagrees with Reish Lakish regarding entrusting an inept with a flame. Rabbi Yochanan is very lenient on the offender, if you will. He's exempt. I gave a flame over to a cheri shaita v'katan to watch. Damage results. I am exempt. What's the parallel to the shor and bor in that case? The parallel would be an untied ox and an exposed pit. Well, why in the case of the shor and bor are we obligating the offender to compensate? And in the case of the flame, he's exempt. And just to emphasize, with regard to Rabbi Yochanan, we're talking about an exposed flame. The Gemara answers, Hossam, in the case of the flame, the damage that results, tzavtza de cheresh kogorim, tzavtza means the holding. The cheresh holding it and carrying it from place to place is what caused the damage. That's in the case of the flame. So the involvement of the cheresh is essential for damage with regard to the flame to result. Hacha, in the case of the shor, the untied ox and the exposed pit, It wasn't the holding of the cheresh that caused damage. It was posed, the damage was imminent, or the threat of damage was posed without the involvement, the physical involvement of the cheresh. Therefore, all of the guilt, all of the culpability descends upon the original owner. Before continuing in the Gemara, let us glance at the side under the Nosei Mivneh heading. A double underline will appear, highlighting expressions Chomer be, etc. Fill in the blank. Chomer means the stringencies associated with one form of damage over another. And we say that mi be in contrast with something else. That'll become much clearer when we go through actual examples. Brisa shemaviyah chumrois shel ovas nezikin sheyesh bozeh ein bozeh. The Brisa, this Tanaic source, which continues quite a few lines down the top of Daf Yud, will highlight the different unique features or stringencies that you find by one form of nezek over another. On the side of the, in the other margin, we have a very abbreviated presentation. We've called it Hashvois Hamofios Bebraiso. The contrasts that will be presented in this Braiso, you'll see shore versus boar, shore versus aish, aish versus boar. And reference to shore in this discussion is the ox as it gores, the goring ox. Tosfos makes this point that the last of the narrow lines, Chomer b'shor, hai shor, hai nu keren, ken mucha b'kula shmeitzen, as will be obvious as we go through the discussion. So now we note, before we go further, just note the use of the double underline. Notice Chomer b'shor mi b'bor, and then Chomer b'bor mi b'shor. And later on the top of Yud, Daf Yud, Chomer b'shor mi b'esh, Chomer b'esh mi b'shor. Each one is pitted off the other one. And finally you see Chomer b'esh mi b'bor, and Chomer b'bor mi b'esh. Let's go through the source, and then we'll give an appropriate introduction to the Gemara that follows. But in the meantime, this source presents I'm not going to say the obvious, but many of the points we have seen already, and they're simply presented in an orderly fashion, contrasting one with the other. At the very beginning of our Masechta, we noted that the value in pointing these things out is justification, we'll say, for the Torah spelling out each one of these different forms of damage and the need to compensate for them. Now the Gemara, Tona Rabbanan, Chomer b'shor mi b'bor, Chomer b'bor mi b'shor. The goring ox versus the pit, each one has features that the other doesn't have. Chomer b'shor mi b'bor, the strictness or the stringencies, the severity of shor overbor. Number one, shall shor mishalim as a koifer. An animal that kills a person pays a payment that's called kofer, that corresponds to the person's, we'll call the person's value. That type of payment, you'll see just in a couple of lines where the Gemara says, Masha'en kein babor. That is not the case of a person that falls into a pit and dies. There, the owner does not pay kofar. What else do we find by the shore? V'chayav b'shloishim shalevet. If an animal kills a person's servant, the Gentile slave that a person owns, a fixed 30 pieces of silver, as legislated by the Torah, must be paid by the owner of the animal. Point three, Nigmar Dinoi Osir Bahano. When the final court ruling on the on an animal that's destined to be executed. That's Nigmar Dino. There was a final ruling regarding the execution of an animal. Amongst different reasons would be if an animal killed a person, and there are other examples. That animal is osir b'hanah. One cannot derive benefit from it. And v'darko leilechu lahazik. It has mobility. Its way is to move along and damage. Ma she'ein kein b'bor. Which is not the case when you're dealing with a pit. Rashi at the bottom line says, "Mashenkei bebor she'ein bala bor chayav b'tashlumi mises odom." A pit into which a person falls and dies does not obligate the pit owner to compensate. Let's continue in the Gemara. Chomer bebor mibashor. Stringencies that you find by the pit over the ox, shabor. As soon as it's dug, it's already prone to damaging. Number two, umud mitchiloso, full payment is made upon the first damage that happens. In the case of a boar, full compensation, full payment is made. Mashen kein b'shor, which is not the case of a goring ox. The first time that an ox gores, second time and third time, the owner pays only half damages. We call that a shor tam. We continue at the top of Daf Yud. Chomer b'shor mi bo'esh. Chomer b'esh mi b'shor. Chomer b'shor mi bo'esh. The severity that is associated with a goring ox over esh, fire. Shehashor m'shalem koifer. V'chayav b'shloishim shel eved. Nigmar dinoi osir b'hanoh. Those 3 points we've already seen and explained. Mosrei l'cheri shayte v'katan chayav. If a shor is given over to one of these inepts, the deaf mute, an imbecile, or a minor, and damage results, the owner is obligated. He is considered acting in negligence by giving the shor to one of these inepts to watch. Masha ein kein beish, as opposed to the case of fire. This, of course, we discussed earlier in today's shiur. Chomer ba'esh mi b'shor, severity that you find associated with fire over the ox. Sho'esh mu'edes mitchilosa mashen kein b'bor, damage that fire causes, where there is responsibility to compensate, compensation is made in full, as opposed to damage resulting from the initial ox goring. We mentioned before that kind of ox is called a shor tam until it's gored 3 times. Chomer be'esh mi b'bor, v'chomer b'bor mi bo'esh. Chomer b'bor mi bo'esh. The pit has elements of stringency, severity over fire. Shetchilas asiyos lenezek. As soon as the pit is dug, it's already prone to causing damage. Mosrei l'cheri shayte v'katan chayov. Masha'en kein ba'esh. Chomer ba'esh mi b'bor. Sheho'esh darka leilechu lahazik. The nature of fire is that it moves along and damages. It's not limited. Its damage power is not limited to where it initially is created. U'mu'edes lechel bein dover haroi lo u'bein dover she'eno roi lo. Masha'en kein b'bor. Here we'll merely translate, but the Gemara will spend time on this matter further. The last point was that fire is mu'edes, is assumed to damage, and you'll pay full damage for consuming, whether it be something royal, something fit, bein dover she'eno, something that's not fit, not expected, which is not the case when it comes to boar. In the case of boar, boar is not held, the owner of the boar is not held responsible in all cases of things that fall into it. We in fact mentioned a situation of a person falling and dying in a boar the owner of the bor is not obligated to compensate. So we had a brisa which gave us quite a few points of contrast between the different forms of damage. We raise a suggestion. Why not include the following? Now, you see a dashed frame. The starred note on the side says, HaKivkuv kan ubahemshech mesamein hatzah lemokor, avleinu mokor mamash. What you see here in this bracketed, this dashed frame, and later on the omit another dashed frame appears, these are merely suggestions for what could have been part of the Tanaic source, but aren't really there. And that's what preoccupies the Gemara. Now, why are these additional contrasts not taught as part of the source? On the side, we have a nosei. We call this a hemshech, a continuation of the topic. Mivne, a structural note. The volcano shape that you see appears as a ma'akav, an attempt to keep track of the back and forth style discussion. The volcano shape, the trapezoid with the narrow part facing up, kushios, they represent questions. Loma lo mofiyim b'moker, why in this Tanaic source do not additional examples appear? And the inverted volcano shape, tshuvos, responses. The Gemara. For listening, why not teach the following? Chomri b'shomri b'bor, a stringency that you find by ox over pit. Shashor chayev boy asakelim asheen kein b'bor, that if an ox damages vessels, the owner is responsible to compensate. If a boar is responsible for damage to vessels fall into a pit, there is exemption. And this suggestion is based on Xeris HaKosos, Shor V'lo Odom, Hamor V'lo Kelim. The Pesuk speaks about the Nofal Shomo, Shor Chamor. The Pesuk speaks about an ox or a donkey falling into a pit. Why they need for those examples, for specific examples. So the Chazal derive from that these are examples of guilt, as opposed to other cases where there will be no guilt. So why not teach this very point, that in the case of ox causing damage of vessels, there is responsibility on the part of the owner, as opposed to vessels damaged by falling into a pit, no responsibility. The Gemara answers, Ha Moni Rabbi Yudahi, the source, the Tanaic source above, is authored by Rabbi Yudah de Mechayv on Niske Kelim Bebor, that obligates the owner of the pit to compensate for vessel damage as well. In other words, not only is a shore responsible for vessel damage, the owner having to pay for that, same thing with bor. So we can't teach vessel damage as a chumrah by shore over bor. Question, notice, question lasts a number of lines. If the above Tanaic source is really authored by Rabbi Yehuda, well, let's check it out by stating the Seifa. And here the Gemara quotes the relevant section. The arrows that you see help you see where it came from above. What did it say in that source that was all suggested to be Rabbi Yehuda? It says, Chomer bu'esh mi b'bor, sh'esh dar galei l'chul ha'hazik, u'mu'ad l'chul bein dover ha'roi lo, bein dover she'ein roi lo, ma she'ein kein b'bor. The stringency you find by fire is that it is going to offer full compensation for ruining whether something that's roi lo, that's fit, whether it's Dover She'en Roy Law. Dover HaRoy Law, my Ninhu. What is something that's considered fit for fire? That fire is ordinarily consumes. Eitzim, wood. Dover She'en Roy Law, my Ninhu. What would be something that you wouldn't associate with fire, that you wouldn't find a fire ordinarily consuming? Kalim. And the source is telling me that you're chayev for both in the case of fire. Ma she'en kein bebor, and then the contrasting phrase of ma she'en kein bebor would mean exemption for vessel damage. Well, E. Rabbi Yehuda, if the above source that has no name is really authored by Rabbi Yehuda, ho amris, but we said mechayev hoya Rabbi Yehuda al nizke kelim bebor. Rabbi Yehuda holds culpability for vessels that are damaged in a pit. So the above source cannot be authored by Rabbi Yehuda. And if that's the case, we go back to our original question. Why couldn't the source have taught where we have the dashed frame that Chomer b'shor mi b'bor, that the shor is chayev on kelim, as opposed to a bor, which is exempt from kelim? We tried to say, well, because that wouldn't be taught, because the source is Rabbi Yehuda, who says that a bor is not exempt from kelim. But that reading, but that answer, I should say, to suggest that the source was authored by Rabbi Yehuda, we see cannot be accepted. That's rejected by what we just said by saying Amos Eifa. Ela li'olam rabbonon hi. The above Tanaic source, the long source, is really authored by the Rabbonon. Ah, if it's authored by the Rabbonon, so there's exemption for vessel damage in the pit. Why was that not taught? Why was the velisni suggestion above in the frame, in the dash frame section, not taught? I'll tell you very simply, Vitana Vashir. The Tana taught many points of contrast and left out. Now, throughout the Shas, wherever you see an answer like this, that a particular source taught what it did and left out something, you can't say it left out only one example. If one point is left out, it's a deliberate avoidance. Therefore, if you want to say that the source left something out and simply was incomplete, and my suggestion could have been included, but it simply was part of a source that was incomplete, something else would have to be left out. And inevitably, the Gemara will say, my shir, the high shir. Well, what else was left out? That this was left out. Answer, shir tomun. This is quite abbreviated, so we look in the Rashi. Shir tomun, literally means something that's covered up or hidden. The Rashi that we're looking at is the upper quarter of the page, in the narrow lines, shir tomun, davilei lemisni, the source could have taught something else. Chomer b'shor, ubor, mibo'esh. Stringency that you find by ox and pit over fire. Shim bo'at shor, besak mo'lei kelim v'shibron chayav. If an ox kicked a sack full of vessels and broke them, the owner of the shor is obligated to compensate. Oim nofa chamor, bebor volof sak mo'lei tvua chayav. Or if a donkey fell into a pit with a sack full of grain, tvua, grain, the damage results, the owner of the pit is chayav. V'afagav de tomun besak, even though it's tomun, even though it's enclosed with it, it's hidden within a sack. Mashe'en kein be'esh, as opposed to damage resulting from fire, denafgalon me'o hakoma, de'enu chayav elo begoloi. Later in the Masechta, the Pasuk says, oh, hakoma, koma is standing grains. We learn from that fire damage resulting in culpability is only if it's damage of that which is exposed, not something contained within something else. So you see that the source could have taught this as well. The chumra that you find by shor and bor, over Eish, in the matter of Tomun. So that was left out, as well as the dashed suggestion above where we said Velisni. Eboyasema, another explanation. You notice that we have this inverted, inverted volcano shape in, say, in succession. Meaning there's no, there's just, this is, that's, enables you to see that this is another explanation of the, or another answer for why was the dashed suggestion above in the Velisni suggestion, why was that left out? So, Iboy is saying, well, Li'olam, Rebbe Yehuda, we'll go back to suggesting that the big source, the unnamed source, is really authored by Rebbe Yehuda. Originally, we had to reject that because of the explanation of the phrase Dover She'ein Roy Law. We have a, you know, just how that phrase is highlighted with a double underline, and we have stars to the side. Above, we had the phrase in the original source. It said Dover She'ein Roy Law regarding fire is our vessels, and then we said we had trouble with that by the term Masha'ein Kein Bebor, that the bor would be example that doesn't fit into Rebbe Yehuda. So here we go back to that and say the Dover She'ein Roy Law regarding fire, for which he'll be obligated to compensate, Lav L'siya Kalim, it's not referring to vessels. By saying vessels, we ran into trouble because of the Masha'en Kein Bebor. Forget it! We're not talking about vessels. And L'siya, the phrase, V'dover She'en Roy Law, comes to, let's see, to include fire as being responsible, or for, you have to compensate for Lichko Niro V'sichsuch Avonav, where fire damages someone's plowed field or singes someone's stones. You don't feed fires with plowed fields or stones. Well, if a fire causes damage to those things, you are nevertheless chayav to compensate for that. And then you would say Ma She'ein Kein Bebor, as opposed to bor. Bor does not damage fields. It's quite obvious that bor is static. Maskif Lo Rav Ashi. And we've made a note between the lines. This question is a question focused on the Eboyus Amal answer that we just gave, which set up the long source at the top as authored by Rebbe Yehuda. So Rav Ashi says, can you really say what you said in the Eboyus Amal, where we dashed underlined the Gemara said, Li'olam Rebbe Yehuda, can you really say that? Well, listening, say the following. Chomer b'shor mi babor, shashor chayav bo, shor psula mukdashim, masha'en kein babor. The ox that I own that damages an ox of psula mukdashim. Psula mukdashim are animals that were originally designated as sacrifices. They were sanctified, but they developed a blemish and they had to be and therefore disqualifies them from being sacrificial material. They are redeemed, and the money is used to buy additional sacrifices. The redeemed animal is called Psulei Hamukdashim. Psulei Hamukdashim, we're telling you here in this suggestion, if it is damaged by a person's ox, compensation must be made. If a psula mukdashim animal falls into a pit, the pit owner is exempt from compensating. Rashi gives the background to that, but for our purposes, you can see something, a significant point of contrast, that a shor has a stringency over bor, and that the owner of a shor that damages psula mukdashim, the owner of the animal, of the damaging animal, has to compensate. Not so in the case of the owner of a pit, into which Psulei Hamukdashim, a blemished former sacrifice, falls. E Amers Bishlamo Rabbonon Hi, if you go like the first answer, where we had the inverted volcano shape and the dashed underline L'olam Rabbonon, so Aidi D'Shi'er Hach, since the original source was already missing examples. It had examples left out. It left out the Tomun example. It left out the Kalim example, where an ox is obligated to compensate for damage of vessels as opposed to a pit. That is the Rabbanan's approach, but that wasn't included. It was left out. Toman was left out. Shir Namihach, this was also left out. This, the case of the shore over the bar regarding Kesilim Mekdashim. Eloyam is Reb Yehuda. But if you want to say that the above source is Reb Yehuda, the long unnamed Tanaic source is Reb Yehuda, my shir, the high shir, what else was left out of the source that would justify leaving this example, the Psuim Mekdoshim example, as being left out? The Gemara says, I have an additional case of a leave out for Reb Yehuda. Shir Dosh Beniro. Rashi, just a line or two up from here, says, Dosh Beniro, Shim Dosh Hashor Beniro, Veniskavin Lekach. If someone's ox goes and tramples someone's freshly plowed field, Nero is a plowed field, and the animal has damaging intention to it. Sharei Shvarim Melumadim Bedisha. Animals are trained in trampling. Told to the Kerenhi, this would be an example of a goring ox, an extension, a derivative of Keren, so that we could include it under the heading of shor. The animal who tramples a plowed field would then be would obligate its owner to compensate for the damage, as opposed to a pit that doesn't damage fields. So you could have so that we can have the source authored above by Reb Yehuda. We said Dover Shein Roy law has nothing to do with Kalim. We suggested why not include the Psula Mekdoshim situation. And we asked if it's Reb Yehuda, so isn't that going to lead to a problem of my Shir, the High Shir? Why was the Psula Mekdoshim example left out? We can answer. It was left out along with another thing that was left out, the case of Dosh Beniro, where a Shor is Chayev and a Bor is exempt. The Gemara says that's not going to help us though to set up the source like Reb Yehuda. Imishum dosh beniroi lav shiurahu, suggesting that dosh beniro, a damaging ox of a plow field, was left out. It's not something that was left out. Dahatana, it was included in that which it taught. Shekein darke leluchu lahazik. We described the chumrus of shor, the stringency of shor, already as something who walks along and damages. Included in that would be its damaging of plowed fields. Therefore, dosh beniro is not a leave out. Ah, with that in mind, then the suggestion of shor psulim udoshim being damaged. Why was that not included? That can be explained only if you accept the Rabbanan approach to things. But if you accept the Reb Yehuda approach to things, Ravashi's question would be a strong question. Why was that left out? And there doesn't seem to be anything else left out. Therefore, we cannot explain the absence of Chomer B'Shor B'Bor regarding Psula Mekdoshim other than by saying, listen, it was left out along with other things that were left out, and all that in accordance with the Rabbanan. So that in the final picture, the Gemara leaves us with the answer of the where we dashed underlined the Olam Rabbanan he, and not the Eboy Asema suggestion that it was also authored by Reb Yehuda. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.